Click in the gallery this morning and welcome back, Brian. I'll declare the meeting open at 9:30 and start by acknowledging the Quandamooka people who are the traditional custodians of the land which we meet this morning. I'd also like to extend that respect to elders past and present and also to other Indigenous Australians who may be present here this morning. Councillors, just a quick reminder at the beginning of the year, as we do at each meeting, just of standing orders, and in particular for our members of the public in the gallery, we do have standing orders that direct how you act in chambers. So there are some signs around chambers you'll see as well, but please, all members of the public present at a meeting must not, without the prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recordings or take any photographs, remain quiet, do not disrupt the meeting in any way. Not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard to other people who are here. Be suitably dressed. Turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave, including you, Alan. Peter, whoever's responsible. Please turn your mobile devices to silent, and if you need to take a call, please leave the meeting to do so. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements and may, with or without such warning, require that person to leave the meeting and not return for a period that the chair decides, and that could include future meetings. I have no leaves of absence this morning, but we do have a devotional segment, and it's a great pleasure for me to welcome and ask our member of the Redlands Ministers Fellowship, Deacon Dom Zaransky from St. Mary MacKillop Catholic Parish, to lead council in a brief devotional segment. Thank you.
Thank you to the Mayor and thank you to the councillors and those in the gallery. It's a great pleasure to be here this morning. As I understand, it's your first meeting of 2018, and so I'm here. I'm Deacon Tom Zaransky, as the Mayor mentioned, from the parish of Mary MacKillop's in Birkdale, which takes in the areas of Thornside, Birkdale and Wellington Point. And I'm really here representing the parish priest, Father Frank Jones. And I'm new to the council area in that I've only been appointed to this parish from the Archbishop in November. So I'm very, very pleased to be here with you this morning and pray with you and be a presence here. I've got a very short prayer here this morning, and this prayer was the prayer that was prayed before every session of the Second Vatican Council, which was a very prominent meeting of Catholic bishops in the 1960s to discern and to hear God's call and direction of the Church, the Catholic Church, in the 1960s, and it's had a lasting impact. And this prayer was prayed before all the council meetings at that council. 2,500 bishops globally came and met in Rome and tried to discern God's will in the life of the Church. So I thought this prayer would be most appropriate as you gather together for the year 2018 to really discern the guidance for the council. So if you'd like to join me in prayer, in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, Amen. We stand before you, Holy Spirit, conscious of our sinfulness, but aware that we gather in your name. Come to us, remain with us, and enlighten our hearts. Give us light and strength to know your will, to make it in our own, and to live it in our lives. Guide us by your wisdom, support us by your power, for you are God, sharing the glory of Father and Son. Your desire, justice for all, enable us to uphold the rights of others. Do not let us to be misled by ignorance or corrupted by fear or favour. Unite us to yourself in the bond of love and keep us faithful to all that is true. As we gather in your name, may we temper justice with love so that all our discussions and reflections may be pleasing to you and earn the reward promised to good and faithful servants. We ask this of you who live and reign forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning, Councillor Elliott. Could you take your seats? If obviously, no, I haven't been advised of any recognitions of achievement at this point in time, but perhaps just a quick mention that last night that we very proudly awarded a number of members of our public community here the Australia Day Award for Redland City, and it was a wonderful event and just a great benchmark for people in our community to aspire to. No doubt the Redland City Bulletin will give a full praise on that, and we look forward to seeing those people acknowledged throughout the course of the year. Receipt and confirmation of minutes. Item 5.1, I need a mover and seconder that the minutes of general meeting on the 13th of December be confirmed. Moved, Councillor Hughes, seconded. Councillor Mitchell, any items of correctness? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour?
They were perfect. Thank you.
I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item number 6, matters outstanding from minutes of a previous general meeting. I'll ask the CEO to present.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. There are three items outstanding from previous meetings, all requiring a report to Council. I might just go through them. 6.1, where Council has resolved to prepare a report on the future area surrounding Birkdale School of Arts in relation to the Birkdale Community Hub, as identified in the Redland Social Infrastructure Strategy. Strengthening Communities team is preparing that report. The report will consider Council's strategic planning documents, including the Social Infrastructure Strategy, which is currently under review, and will be informed by the recent census data, which is coming through to all organisations with engagement with community groups, which is already occurring. That report's due to come back to a Council meeting by the end of March. In relation to 6.2, the request for a report on the fire management plans, the completion of the Council fact sheets, they are drafted and they're being finalised. Council itself doesn't create fire management plans for individual private properties, but our fact sheet and website will direct people to the South East Queensland Fire and Biodiversity Consortium's material. That'll also be linkable from our website. That report's due to come back to Council on the 21st of February. The community may be interested to know that Council is holding individual property fire management workshops at our Indigiscapes Centre on the 10th of March. I think it's from 9 till 12. There's information available on our website. In relation to item 6.3, the Toondah Harbour petition, which arose out of the 22nd of November meeting, I can advise the report is being drafted to address the items raised in the petition, which includes the impact on Council should it withdraw from the proposal, costs associated with creating a new plan to upgrade the ferry terminals and car parking upgrades at both Cleveland and Dunwich, and environmental considerations, including the impact on the Marine Park and the Ramsar site. I'm expecting that report to come to a general meeting in probably late February or early March. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. I'm moving on to item 7, which is public participation. If I could have a mover and seconder, please, that the meeting adjourn for a 15-minute public participation segment to allow members of the public to address Council on matters of public interest related to local government. Move Councillor Bolglari, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, I do have someone that has applied to address Council this morning, which is Mrs. Robin Thwaite. So, Robin, if you'd like to just make your way up to the microphone. And what I'll do is I'll just read out the procedures before you begin so that you're clear on how we do address the local government here at Redland City. So you may have seen there is signage around the chamber that regards how we deal with public participation, and it's our usual practice to require any person wishing to address Council to state their name, suburb and or the organisation they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. It's important that you know that the information is recorded in the minutes of this meeting, which is a public document, and it's available at our Council Administration building for others to see and published on Council's website. Just so you're also aware, this meeting is being recorded in audio video, and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that the recording video may be placed in the public domain. So, just a quick rundown again, state your name and suburb or organisation you represent and subject you wish to speak about. Stand unless you're unable to do so. Please act and speak with decorum and be respectful and courteous in your comments. Make no comments directed at any individual council employee, councillor or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to council as a whole. And just a reminder that as chairperson, it's my responsibility to consider each application on its merits and any relevant material in making my decision to allow or disallow a person to address the local government. It's also my responsibility to give priority to members of the public who have made written application to the CEO to address the meeting, and to determine the maximum number of speakers based on the number of persons wanting to speak and the time available. Each speaker has a maximum of 5 minutes, dependent on the number of speakers, and It's also my responsibility to withdraw the approval to address council before the time period has elapsed. Just a reminder also for councillors and members in the public gallery that this isn't a time for public debate or discussion, it's just an address to council. If there's any speakers that require who require a hearing, please let us know and we'll bring the microphone to you and we'll ask you to stand in the gallery. Okay, so over to you, Mrs. Thwaite.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Williams and councillors. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to address you on behalf of the concerned residents and ratepayers in the area of a proposed development application at 41 Ziegenfuse Road, Thornlands. My name is Robin Thwaite and I live at 28 Trout Street in Thornlands. Our home is immediately behind...
Mrs. Thwaite, sorry to interrupt you. Are you able to get a little closer to that microphone? Or just...
Yep. Is that better?
Yeah, that is a little bit. I'm not sure if there's anyone from facilities here. It sounds like it's a bit low. If you get a little bit closer, that we'll manage. Thank you. My apologies.
No, that's okay. Firstly, I assume that you are familiar with the submissions that were already assessed against this proposal, but the main points of these submissions were the complete lack of any certainty over the terminology of undefined use, the potential devaluation of adjoining properties, potential increase to insurance premiums to the adjoining properties, the safety aspect of a possible transient population in close vicinity to two large schools, and the perceived risks to the public and particularly our children from the potential transient population, and potential additional congestion both in parking and traffic passing through the area. Specifically, I'd like to address the perceived risks from the potential transient population. I understand that on behalf of the owners of the property, Mr. Brett Richards of Pro Town Planners, submitted a written response to our submissions addressing some of our perceived problems. This response indicated that all current occupants of the property are of good character. We have to wonder how this was assessed by Mr. Richards. Did he actually interview each tenant? Was he relying on the questionable rental application process? Or did he actually just take the owner's word for it? This may be the case at the moment that they are of good character, but as a multiple rooming accommodation of undefined use invariably means a transient population. The owners cannot therefore guarantee this in perpetuity. Properties with tenants inevitably experience problems that with tenants that are not of good character. It's a fact of life, and it's always the immediate neighbours and the surrounding areas that suffer from these problems, not the owners who generally live elsewhere. This area is a settled, residential, family-oriented area with a reputation for high-quality homes and for being a safe and secure suburb. In fact, when moving here 20 months ago, our insurance premiums dropped considerably from our previous suburb because of the safe reputation of this area. This can quickly change if proposals such as this development are given a foothold in the area, and approving this application would create a precedent that I'm sure Council does not wish the Redlands to become infamous for. Some research of the potential usage of this type of development has brought to light the state government moves to seek out multi-room accommodation houses, such as that proposed in the application, for early release prisoners to be integrated back into the community. This would be used as a substitute for the state government failing to provide appropriate housing for these prisoners in an area where supervision could be maintained. This type of use of multi-room accommodation has usually been to the detriment of the adjoining properties and surrounding areas with increased crime rates, significant disturbances requiring the assistance of our already overstretched police service. Perhaps to further highlight this problem, I'd remind Council of the article published in the Redland City Bulletin on the 14th of September 2017 on the closure of the Thornlands Rehab Centre, breaking through transitional services. In that article, local police stressed how happy they were to see the centre close, as they were forever being called out to the property. Also in support of this, I would refer Council to the 2013 report on Queensland prisons, page 11, which addressed the need for housing for released prisoners, saying, and I quote, "The provision of secure housing and support for an individual to maintain a tenancy appears a key factor in higher criminal justice usage and emergency service costs. In a nutshell, they reoffend and generally where they live." Also of interest in this matter is an article published in the Courier Mail on Sunday, the 27th of August 2017, where the Deputy Premier, Jackie Trad, intervened to scuttle plans for a youth detention centre to be sited within her electorate. The state opposition claiming at the time, Labor's schemes mean that young offenders charged with any type of offence, including serious violent offences, could be held in houses right next door to families across the state. This is the type of tenant that could potentially be housed at the property, something I think none of us want. I'd also like to briefly address some inconsistency in both the owner's application information and in the pro-town planner's response. The owner's notice of commencement of public notification paperwork clearly states that as a requirement of the Act, they were required to notify by registered mail all adjoining properties. They did not. They did not comply. We received no such registered mail, and I believe at least one other adjoining property was the same. And we were actually only alerted to the proposal by the sign placed at the front of the property. Mr. Richards of Plough Town Planners, on behalf of the owners, indicated in his response that there were no complaints of noise pollution, specifically loud music. This is also not the case with both ourselves and the residents of number 43, Mr. Jeff and Mrs. Pamela Serson, having complained to the tenants. The fact that these complaints have not been escalated to the owners is simply a sign of our current leniency in this matter, leniency which is wearing thin. Mr. Richards stated also that an unroadworthy vehicle parked in the street was actually back in 2010 and was the previous owner. Wrong again. Since we moved here in April 2017, there's been at least one unroadworthy vehicle parked in the street for some weeks before it was moved off the road and onto the front of the property, minus its rear axle. Mr. Richards also stated that the tenant owns a trailer parked on the road and has been asked to move it. The trailer has never been moved. The rubbish accrued against its wheels is obvious of that, not lack of action. And obviously no follow-up action has been taken by either the owners or Mr. Richards on their behalf in response to this request. This again highlights the lack of care and control over tenants by the owners and is a strong indication of what awaits us in the future should this application be approved. In closing, I and my fellow residents and ratepayers sincerely hope that you will continue to support the people of the Redlands and, in this case, select option 4, not approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Slate. Are there any other members that would like to address council? Is it on the same topic? No, it's a different topic. Okay, please make your way to the microphone. And just a reminder to state your name and suburb or the organisation you represent, and please, you can start when you're ready.
Good morning, Mayor, councillors and members of the public. My name is Mary Jane Turk and I'm a Thornlands resident.
Mary Jane, I'll just get you to move that microphone again to be... Sorry.
I am here today to speak about application ROL 6084 for 19 lots at 289301 Cleveland Redland Bay Road that you are to vote on today. This application is in the South East Thornlands Structure Plan and has again ignored the SET Structure Plan with no planned access onto Cleveland Redland Bay Road. However, this time, if the application is approved in its current form, you will almost be certain of signing a death warrant. During the court case with the Waterline Estate, the offset access points onto the road shown in the SET plan were assessed by three traffic engineers, including the close proximity and interference with ours and our neighbours' driveways. It was decided to move the eastern side intersection 50 metres north to join the other offset intersection, and that an ultimate four-way signalised intersection was a far superior outcome for the growing population in this area. Then the Esperance Estate put in their application for a temporary left-in, left-out intersection onto the road, not only ignoring the court decision, but the SET structure plan that stated no temporary points would be supported. Our submissions to this application that pointed out motorists would not drive the 500 metre in either direction to do legal U-turns to enter the estate were ignored, and not even noted in the submission report on that application. To our amazement, the temporary access point was approved as permanent by DTMR and Redland City Council. RCC has been given independent reports to help assess this new application, and as I have not yet had access to these reports, I can only hope they support the court-approved four-way signalised access point onto Cleveland Redland Bay Road, which means this application must be refused. I have time and again supplied submissions and photos to both DTMR and RCC over the amount of cars now performing U-turns along approximately 100 metres of roadway, particularly in front of my property, compromising our access and safety. Experts have ignored these submissions, saying there have been no reported accidents. I myself have been hit entering my property, and no, it wasn't reported. I have also witnessed more of these minor accidents along the road as well. But one day, one poor car will come over the hill to a car or truck performing a U-turn in front of it, and it will be a T-bone accident and will almost certainly be a fatality. I have some of these photos today. The two top cars were taken yesterday out of the four cars which I saw. And performing U-turns to enter Esperance. This is in no way a true estimate of the number of the vehicles, as I am not out there all day or have a camera in my hand. I am not a traffic engineer or a town planner, but I have common sense and I shudder every time I hear horns in a long warning sound and I wait for the bang. I do not want to be the first on the scene as it will be horrific. It is about time these so-called experts stop looking at this on paper and get out and see what is occurring. As I am sure any of you who travel this road have witnessed this behaviour. The property subject to the application had a banner stretched across it for the local elections, promising to fix this road. We're still waiting, and the state government has no plans in the near future to upgrade the road or even the section between Didwoonie and Beveridge Roads, which is now life-threatening. DTMR has approved the layout of the current application against the planning documents that it should have assessed them against. Left as it is, it will only be a matter of time before lives are lost on this road. If this application is approved in its current form, then the four-way signalised intersection can never be built, as the application shows housing lots at the intersecting point. This is not a minor issue about lot sizes of a development. This seriously affects many Redland residents from all over the city, including cyclists, like in the last U-turn tragedy a month ago, in another well-known place for U-turns. As our representatives, please do not play Russian roulette with our lives. Use your vote to refuse this application, which has already lodged an appeal, until the layout of the application restores access onto Cleveland Redland Bay Road by the signalised four-way intersection access to Esperance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Turk. Are there any other members in the gallery that would like to address council this morning? There being none, that I'll ask for move and seconded councillors that the meeting proceedings are resumed. Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Petitions and presentations. I believe, Councillor Bishop, you have a petition to present.
Yes, indeed. Good morning and thank you, Madam Mayor, and Happy New Year to officers, councillors and to residents in the gallery. I'd like to acknowledge also the presence of the principal petitioner for this and also some other representatives from the community. Councillors, this morning I'm presenting a petition from residents requesting that council halt the development of Three Paddocks Park, which has a proposed BMX upgrade and expansion, until the current status of this development has been identified and explained to all interested parties, including stakeholders, and that the current environmental, conservation and safety impacts have been identified in relation to park usage, as well as clarification that the park is a community park and not a sporting field. Before I move the motion, I'd just like to mention that we have a meeting scheduled this afternoon with officers, but the motion is that this petition I'd like to move is that this petition is of an operational nature and that it be received and referred to the Chief Executive Officer for consideration.
So moved by Councillor Bishop, seconded by Councillor Edwards. I'll just take the vote. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Thank you, councillors. I haven't been advised of any presentations this morning. I think we had a few of those at our last meeting of 2017, so I'll move on to the order of business. Councillors, is there any motion to change the order of business? There being none, I'll move straight on to your reminder of material personal interest and conflict of interest under the Local Government Act. Councillors, just a reminder about declaring your material personal interest or conflict of interest about a matter to be discussed at a meeting. And, of course, there's a summary of your responsibilities in your agenda. I'll go straight on to the first report, which is 11.1.1, which is the December 2017 monthly financial report. Move Councillor Edwards. Seconded Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
Yes, item 11.1.1, December 2007 monthly financial reports. Just quickly, the notes in the report itself basically cover everything. There's just a few points to note. The year-to-date operating deficit is $314,000, which is less than the revised budget deficit of $1.07 million. My feeling is that that gap will probably narrow over the coming months. There are the usual key performance ratios we touch on each month, and that hasn't changed. The cash balance has stood at $141 million, so debt servicing and bill payment ratios are easily met. One thing to note is that the Capital Works had a big tick up in December and has narrowed the gap to the budget, which is good to see. That's what all I have to say for it. Thanks.
Any speaker against, councillors? Comment, Councillor Hughes? Oh, just quickly, for the movers and seconders, that the report has actually been amended, and that's what you're moving on the motion. Yeah, acknowledged. Okay, sorry, Councillor Hughes, comment.
Thank you very much. And with relation to that amendment, thank you very much to the CFO and the team that picked up that just basically a typo, a line adjustment. But the rigour and the vigour that we have been subject to is really greatly appreciated right up until last evening. Thank you very much, CFO. I'd like to comment on page 3 of the report. About halfway down, there's a line that says, of the $13.49 million for contractors, mowing the city's parks and open spaces was $1.39 million year-to-date, so about halfway through the year, and we've spent $1.39 million. I know it's a summer issue, but so many of us have been contacted by our residents that our parks appear a little long with the grass. It's just one of those things I'd like to comment on. We have such a schedule that's in place, but summer comes, people take a holiday, the grass grows and it jolly well rains. So I think to our residents, here clearly is $1.39 million year to date that is spent on our park mowing, and I commend our team. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments, councillors? There being none, Councillor Edwards, anything to add? I will put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item 11.1.2 is the review of delegations of the CEO, Chief Executive Officer, something that we do on a regular basis. Have I moved for that, councillors? Move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Bishop. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
Very briefly, Madam Mayor. Yeah, the delegations of the CEO are just very important for the timely and efficient functioning of council, and they're all properly reviewed. To show the gallery, that's the delegation. So, a bit of bedtime reading for you to check them all. And if you have any concerns, please let us know. Thank you.
Any other comment? Any other comments or any speakers against? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Item 11.1.3 is increased thresholds of council's assets. Have a mover and seconder for that. Move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Boglari?
Oh, it's a pretty comprehensive report, and it's just talking about the lower valued assets under $5,000, and mainly just accounting.
A speaker against? Question, Councillor Bishop, or comment?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and to the CEO, CFO, thank you very much yesterday for clarification in relation to some questions. Some of those questions were really relating to the size of infrastructure that was below $5,000, and I have every confidence that that is all still accounted for within the organisation's accounting processes. And so some of my initial concerns when I saw the $5,000 amount left me wondering what was happening with all of that, but to know that all those processes are not only robustly measured, but they're accounted for in all the teams and still feeding up into the organisation, our overall asset management, I can see that over time, although this will result in a cost increase in the short term, will actually bring us into line with where the state requirements are and other councils. So thank you very much for that clarification yesterday.
Questions or comments? I think one of the areas that it will deal with, if I could just comment, is that, you know, we, as you know, councillors every year have to raise about $60 million just to cover depreciation. So in the long term, that'll start to address some of those issues, and that's a lot of money to raise in rates to be able to run a operating or a balanced operating position or hopefully a surplus. So small step, but one of the many steps we need to take to address that on behalf of our ratepayers. Councillor Boglari, anything else you'd like to add? With that, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 11.2.1, decisions made under delegated authority for Category 1, 2, 3 development applications. Move, Councillor Elliott. Seconded, Councillor Gleeson. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Elliott?
No, Mayor. Look, it's just an item for noting, and maybe if councillors want to make a comment on it.
Councillors, any questions or comments? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Item 11.2.2, the P&E list. Move, Councillor Bishop. Seconded, Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Bishop?
No, Madam Mayor. Only to move that this is an update on the development and planning related appeals list, and we've been advised by officers that we'll be given some more information in relation to dot points 2 and 3, or application 2 and 3, with relation to Cleveland Power. Just an update there, but noting the report. Thank you.
Thank you. No other discussion, councillors. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 11.2.3. Mover and second, and move, Councillor Elliott. Second. I was going to need to get a seconder for you, Councillor. Seconded, Councillor Boglari. Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Mayor. 11.2.3, ROL 006206, 22 Indus Street, Victoria Point. I move the officer's recommendation.
2.3. So did you say 2.6 or
2.3?
2.3. Oh, 2.3. I misheard you. That's okay. So we've got a mover and second. Are you speaking to it, Councillor?
Just briefly.
Okay.
Yes, I'm sure this may not go anywhere, ma'am. I consider this to be a standard application one in two, and we are seeking a 20 square metre portion of site to the proposed dedicated on the northeast truncated corner, I think, a road reserved to facilitate the future Moreton Bay cycleway. I understand some of my colleagues aren't too happy about it, but I'm happy. That's as far as I'll go. Thank you.
Speaker against? Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I find the officer's report is a little bit wanting for me. This is a very unique block on the waterfront at Victoria Point. The first point I'll make is that it is in the urban residential zone, which states in the probable solutions that the density of the lot should be no greater than 1 in 400 metres squared. So the density here is below those on both those lots. But I draw your attention, obviously the officers have drawn our attention to the reconfigure zone, and the reconfigure zone says this is a medium reconfig because there is a bit of a road dedication. Now I sought external advice on that statement, and the external planner that I spoke to said that if that's not actually going to be used for a road, that's drawing a long bow to say that that's going to be a road reserve. So saying that it's a road reserve is very subjective, but hey, I'll go with what the officers have said and we'll go to the reconfiguration zone. In Probable Solutions 2.1, the reconfig zone says that lots can go down to 350 square metres, and hence we have now have an application that complies with the zoning. However, the officers did not draw our attention to 2.2 in the Probable Solutions of the reconfig zone, which says 30% of the lots in a medium reconfig should be small lots. Well, in this case, 100% of the lots are small lots. And the reason I draw your attention to that, this is a really scenic waterfront precinct. The fill doesn't meet the probable solution. The living areas of these two houses that are going to be built there, they're wide frontages, they're shallow blocks, so they're going to be big McMansions across those two lots. And it will impact not only Edinburgh Street but also Pelican Street, and that is evidenced by the fact that the street address of this property is currently 22 Edinburgh Street, but it will become Pelican Street address when it's developed. It is right at the end of two waterfront cul-de-sacs. There are serious storm tide ramifications of being there, and the quality of that lot, they're not going to put little homes on it, let me tell you. I'd say there are going to be relaxations built to the boundary, and it is going to overshadow the houses around it. Every other house around it complies with the urban residential codes, minimums of 400. This one is going to compromise the code in the UR zone and also doesn't meet the probable solutions of the reconfig zone. The fill is overextended, so it's going beyond the probable solutions with the fill, and I have great concerns about it. What I'm especially concerned about, I thought the officers would have gone back to the developer and said, we'd like an indicative building design or something so we can have an idea of what you're going to build here. So if this gets up today, it's going to force me now, if it doesn't meet the QDC requirements, I'm going to have to call in a building application so I'm sure that the people living in those streets get the best outcome. It's a beautiful area. I can't emphasise enough what it's like driving down there and being able to look over the fence of those houses down there at the water. And I can guarantee if this development gets through on those small lots, which it doesn't meet the UR zone or the reconfig zone, it's going to destroy the whole amenity, in my opinion. Thank you.
Speaker 4. Councillor Riley, I was going to go to that point. I just wanted to make sure I had the debate first. So are there any other speakers for? Yeah, I will have the officers address that, but I'll have them address all the points that might be raised through the debate, Councillor. So Councillor Mitchell?
Yes, I will be voting for this, but also in the unique position where I'll be absolutely supporting Lance if the building application comes in, because to me it's not about the size of the lot. The to get the cycle link there, I think, is very important. So I think that's terrific. To have a lot that then dips under a certain random number doesn't bother me too much. Comes down to what is the building that's going to go on those lots, and is it respectful to the amenity and the location? And so while I'll be voting for it today, I'll certainly be looking very closely into the future at actually what gets built and trying to use every tool we can to make sure that's respectful of the area and location. Thank you.
Any other speakers against? David, I might just get you to maybe come up here and just explain planning approval versus a building application and council's capacity to do that in the planning application and some of the other issues that have been raised.
Good morning, councillors. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I guess there's probably three issues that were raised by Councillor Hewlett. The first is whether the land dedication, so the small portion of land that's being conditioned to be transferred to council, is a road. A road is defined under the Land Act, and the Land Act includes purposes such as pathways, esplanades and the like. So whilst this would be used for a pathway slash cycleway, that does fit within the definition of a road under the Land Act. That then means that this is a medium reconfiguration as defined under the planning scheme. And in the reconfiguring a lot code, the minimum lot size in the probable solution is 350 square metres, as Councillor Hewlett pointed out. Councillor Hewlett then questioned whether the development complied with probable solution 2.2, and quite rightly it doesn't. What the report says is that the application complies with the planning scheme as a broad statement, that it deals with the pertinent issues. In assessing the application, the officers considered specific outcome 2.2, which deals with matters such as density required to meet population growth and housing choice, and officers considered that the proposal complied with that specific outcome. Turning lastly to the planning versus building matter, if council approves this development, the future building of houses on those lots will be subject to QDC, the Queensland Development Code, and that stipulates matters such as site coverage, building height, setbacks, and the like. If a proposal doesn't comply with QDC, then there will be an application made to council, and council can consider whether it's appropriate on merit. And as Councillor Hewlett pointed out, that matter could be called in by the councillor and a decision made by full council.
All questions answered there, Councillor Elliott? No, just making sure that everything was covered. Okay, I'll just stop. Stormtide.
Sorry, my apologies, I did miss that one. So the planning scheme has a stormtide overlay, and the state planning policy also has an overlay to deal with stormtide inundation. This lot will be filled to ensure that it is immune from that future stormtide event. Now, that does mean that there is filling slightly in excess of the probable solution. So the probable solution for fill under the planning scheme is 750 millimetres. This proposal does fill in excess of that. Officers are satisfied that that additional fill won't have an adverse impact on the adjoining property owners, and also satisfied that it won't have an adverse impact on streetscape and amenity, partly because, as we know, there are other properties in this locality that may be subject to future applications, and they in themselves will be subject to future filling, which is really ensuring that developed lots across that part of the city and the coastline are all subject to future filling.
Okay, Councillor Gleeson, you have a question? Just check while I've got David in the seat. Are there any other questions of David? Thank you, Councillor Boglar. I'll come to you, Councillor Gleeson.
Okay, thank you. I understand the local councillor's angst about this development because infill is impacting various suburbs, especially our older suburbs as it happens along the way. Overall, though, it's the best outcome for the community at the end of the day within our planning schemes, and that's where I'm struggling with. So with this, as the block is now, and under the zoning it is now, if they don't give us the pathway, can they still subdivide it and put two houses up and it will still have the same bulk and impact? And then if they're granted giving the pathway to us, they will still have two blocks, but we get the same amount of density, but we're going to get a pathway out of it. Is that's my concern, that either way we go here, this community, which is, like the councillor said, a very special forefront foreshore area with older homes, it will be impacted to the same degree, I'm guessing, but one way is we get a linkage and the other way we don't.
So I guess there's probably three scenarios there. The first is what could happen if this lot was not subdivided. So if somebody wanted to demolish the existing house and rebuild, what rules would they be subject to? Those rules would be QDC, and the site coverage would be 50%, the setbacks would be as per QDC. Building height would be as per QDC, which is 8.5 metres. So you could have 50% of that lot covered with building, 8.5 metre height. Yes, because the SPP would apply to future development. Second scenario is the lots or the land dedication isn't taken for road reserve. In that scenario, this would be a minor reconfiguration. The probable solution lot size would be 400 square metres. It wouldn't meet that probable solution, but officers still believe it would have been approved as compliant with the specific outcome. In that scenario, lots are slightly larger. QDC would apply to future building work, which would be 50% site coverage, 8.5 metre height, and setbacks the same. Third scenario is the application before council has the land dedication. Future building work will be subject to QDC, which is 50% site coverage, 8.5 metre height. So in essence, the future built form would be the same or very similar in all three scenarios, or could be the same or similar.
Okay. Any other questions haven't been answered? I'll just join Councillor Bishop, and then this is questions to the officer, and then comments will come after that.
Yes. My question relates to the land that is available with the existing portion still there. Have we done a study to see whether it's possible to get a pathway through there and not require the land dedication? Is that a possibility that would still facilitate a pathway but not allow or necessarily... has that study been done? That's the first question.
David?
I believe it would have been by officers. I'd need to defer to them to confirm, but I believe it would have been. And the other point to make is that, we're quite constrained in that part of the city in terms of access for pathways and the like. And anything we can do to remove or to move pathways further away from the foreshore is preferred.
I understand that. And I also understand that partly the dilemma that we as councillors and officers are faced with is that when we want to nuance development in our areas, that we're limited to whole of city constraint and decisions, which is why we're left with the QDC and this particular instance. I wonder, in future, in areas like this, where we are aware that there is a greater desire from the community for amenity, whether we may need to consider ways that we can address this by considering local area planning. Is there any other way that you might be able to suggest in future that something like this could be...
We are kind of getting a little bit off topic here, Councillor.
I'm trying to actually address the actual issue.
And I'm chairing the meeting, and I'll have the officer respond, but we are getting off topic, and my job is to keep us on topic as chair. So if you could quickly respond, David, and then I'll move on to the next question.
So for future building work for dwelling houses, we are limited to QDC, the Queensland Development Code. Council can adopt alternative provisions to QDC, but they're quite limited in their scope and what Council can do. Council has, through the draft planning scheme, adopted some alternatives to QDC. So councillors may recall, for example, in the rural residential type zone, Council has adopted a 10-metre setback as opposed to the standard 1.5. So you can have alternatives, but it's quite limited in scope.
And just for those people in the public gallery, QDC is Queensland Development Code, which is something that is legislated by the state. And as has been explained, we're limited as local government as to what we can replace those criteria with. Okay, Councillor Hewlett, you have a question? Well, I'll come back to you then, if that's okay. Any other questions for David? I'll allow David to go back to his seat if he feels more comfortable there. Councillor Gleeson, you have a comment?
Thanks, Mayor. Yeah, just a couple of comments to add to that. Really excited about an extension of the bikeway or what can happen from this down the track, and I think that should be a priority for us in the city. A lot of our foreshores have been planted out over the years, and the residents can't enjoy it. So for that element, I'm really excited about. That's about where it stops for me. I hate probable solutions. I've said it in here before. I want to see black and white lines. I want to see the rules where blocks can be split to 400 square metres or 450 or 350 or 500. I don't care what size, but I hate seeing rubbery lines under the name probable solutions. As far as small blocks go, Councillor Hewlett and I are probably on the same wavelength. It's probably the only place where we think the same. I'm not a fan of small blocks. But the fact is, they've been going on for a long time, and I've certainly got friends, one at Mount Cotton, one at Tapalabar, and Maradar Park, they've got blocks, one's 308 square metres, one's 316, and they're both 20-year-old homes. This is not a new thing that's been beat up in the media, but it's not a new thing in the city. State government legislation is where we've got to tackle this on. We've tried in the past to get more of a prescriptive ruling, but this probable solution does... Anyone's head in who tries to work around the planning schemes and what council has to approve and what they can't approve. It should be black and white. These are the rules.
Yep.
the planning legislation is merit-based. That's the system we have, and what all we can do is try to improve our the tools that are provided to us by the state to get the best outcome. So you're aware of that. We've all lobbied on that.
And Mayor, just finally, I mean, based on everything we know, it meets the provisions, and I can see no way to other than to approve it, as much as I don't particularly like it.
Thank you. Okay. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd just like to draw a few comments to the councillor's attention. Firstly, during the planning scheme discussions, not one councillor in this room agreed to go below 400 square metres in the UR zone.
That's in the proposed, to be very clear, that's in the proposed city plan, which is not the plan that we're just not, we are not dealing with that right now. We have to actually assess this under the current
scheme, this does not meet the probable solution in the UR zone. It does not meet the probable solution in the reconfig zone 2.2. It also, the street aesthetics have not been, we can't even assess the street aesthetics or the streetscape because we have no building design to look at. This is a highly aesthetic, beautiful waterfront precinct with a fantastic streetscape, and we haven't addressed it. We've allowed this infill to go over the probable solution. We're allowing them to go below the probable solution on the density in the UR zone and in the reconfig zone. So it's like we're looking for loopholes to get this through. It's really frustrating. About the Moreton Bay Cycleway, I've already had several meetings with officers in the past. The Moreton Bay Cycleway will go down Bay Street most likely, then hook up to the back of Tranquil Waters. So this is really just a pedestrian connection between Enver Street and Pelican Street. It is not part of, it won't ultimately be part of the Moreton Bay Cycleway. So that particular point is moot. It's just, I don't know if the officers go out on site and look at this block.
All right, Councillor. I think we're kind of...
Anyway, well...
I think you're agreeing to disagree with what the officers have provided. They've provided their assessment.
I disagree with what the officers have said.
Yeah, and I respect that, but the officers have assessed it according to the tools that they have.
Well, I've sent reasons for refusal through to Liz if she wants to...
Well, I think at the moment we've got a live motion, so we'll have to see how that goes first, Councillor Hewlett, if that's okay. If there's no other comments, I'll hand back to you, Councillor Elliott, to sum up.
Thanks, Mayor. Just on one comment. I can see Councillor Hewlett's frustration. Certainly, look, this is happening in Wynnum all the way along. 1.2. I actually looked at the block up near the old Wynnum Fish Market, and it was more than that. I think it was about 1.5. And the house next door was a low-set brick place, like you would have been just there. There's nothing, and it was all above board. You could tick it. That's how it works.
All above board, but doesn't make it.
Fortunately, we have a responsibility to abide by the legislation that's provided to us. So we can have our personal views, and they're always articulated in here, and we'll give that opportunity. But at the end of the day, as you know, what our personal views might reflect may not reflect in a planning and environment court, where you're going to get an outcome that could be similar or worse. So, yes, we're between a rock and a hard place in this job. But you have to consider the bigger picture of how many things you want to fight on the floor of a P&E court. To get a better outcome or a worse outcome, when you know that the legislation that we have to abide by makes certain statements about how this is assessed. Sorry, Councillor Elliott, I'm hearing the comment.
Can I borrow that into mine?
What?
Can I borrow your sum up in mine?
Absolutely.
Okay, following on from that, the potential to ask somebody to the impost, I'll put, of asking for house plans to be put on blocks. Was put to me. I did a subdivision years and years ago, and Sunview Avenue was one of the first. Actually, the officers had to bring it here to say, would council let it have a 10-metre, divide a 20-metre block into two 10s? And away you go. I had to supply plans on site. Those plans were costly. It was a architectural, both houses had to be architecturally designed, and the houses that were built later weren't those houses. So that was quickly dismissed by council, and it's one of those things. You do subdivision and the building thing. I have a concern on houses, but on house design, but it, as alluded to by David, that you can build anything. You know, you can build a big block. It can look like, as I said, the castle on Ney Road that's got a truncated top. A square top, looks like a castle. You can build those sort of things as long as it's in the building code. Yes, just covering over those things about building houses and things like that. So with that, I'll let it go.
I wasn't trying to stop you, Councillor. I just want to make sure you... Oh, please.
I'll let you go on this one.
No, I just wanted to make sure you weren't adding new material.
No, I wasn't adding material.
Okay, thank you.
That
standing orders, that's all.
Said about house designs, and I was saying...
Yep.
appreciate that. Thank you, Councillor. Okay, thank you. All right, can I... I put the motion... Thank you, Councillors. Councillors! Councillor Gleeson, please. Finished? I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Councillors, those in favour? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams, those against, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hughes. Thank you. Moving on, 11.2.4, an item for noting, Councillors. Can I have a mover, please? Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Elliott?
It's just an update of the advisory board, and I think it's what you see is what you get. Thank you.
Questions or comments? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Okay, item 11.2.5, MCU 013977. Mover and seconder for that. Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Elliott?
Yes, thanks, Mayor. I listened to the lady who spoke very, very well on this subject, I must say. But, however, I think the reality is in any town, and this city has about 14,000 to 15,000 houses are rentals, straightforward rentals. This would be one of the few that's been identified that operate this way. There's many, many houses probably operate this way. I see no difference in having the only difference is in council can hang is the lease to individual tenants. If that wasn't available and the bloke to charge everybody $200 a week, it's the same as any other house. You have individual. You can have a house next door can be the worst neighbours in the world in 6 months' time. They can be there forever. And I don't see these. This is no more different to a rental house, and I don't get into this transient house. I don't take the worst option as far as that goes. You could have a mix of people in this house, could be no noise whatsoever. The noise thing applies to everybody. This, by approving this, gives us some, not hope, until our planning scheme is adopted with room accommodation incentives, that we certainly, we've got some control over the development. But certainly it's not going to stop somebody coming along with six young kids, and I've got one in Alexandra Hills. The kids cross the road, they're both beautiful houses, the neighbours fight each other across the road. The boys park the cars and the boats on the road, they're all legal, they're registered, da-da-da-da-da. And it's a narrow street, and the guy can't get in and out of his driveway. Like, that's just one of those things. I can't see the difference, and this is the same as the Wardley one. If this decision goes down, we go to court in 2 weeks' time, our head solicitor will be back here and saying, we're going to lose this in court, you can burn a ton of cash, and you'll get the same result. And you might get a worse result. But at least in this, it looks like a house and smells like a house. It's not an ugly-looking place, as far as that goes. It's on a busy road, but you will tend to find on places like Finucane Road and busy roads, and Finucane Road's 36,000 cars a day, is they are rental houses, and that's the nature of the dog. That is the nature of the dog. And I can see this. I can see no difference to this and the house on the other side of the lane or next door. For all I know, they could all be rentals along that street right now. And it fits in. It looks the same. The guy's actually putting in, what, two extra toilets for a five- or six-bedroom house. I think it's being done right, and we can tidy it up, given our approval. Yep.
I've got two people with their hands up already, Councillor. Speaker against, Councillor Gleeson, and then...
Thanks, Mayor. I hate these. I think they're a scourge on our community. I think they're going to be a big problem that's going to come up and get worse and worse and worse. Councillor Elliott is right. There are plenty of them out there, and to date, our officers have been working on some sort of on how we regulate them and stop them, because we know about them because we receive complaints about them. Councillor Elliott might not have one in his street, but I've certainly got an area in Kapalbar that's been stripped apart by one particular developer, and he's putting, you know, into a two-bedroom duplex, he's turning them into four one-bedroom units. Same person's also renting out single garages on the islands. These things need to be stopped. We cannot encourage these by development. Now, I argued 18 months ago about this other one in Capella Bar that Councillor Elliott just mentioned. This house was built as a house. Three bedrooms don't have bathrooms, so we're going to expect three people to share the same bathroom. The difference between these, and Councillor Elliott said there's no difference between him renting out to different people in the same house. Well, there is a big difference. The difference is if it's Councillor Elliott's house and he does that, he lives in the house. He's responsible for when the tenants play up, when they have parties, loud music, strip down cars in the front yards. In this case, no one living on the property is responsible for the property. That's the big difference. I hate these. They're a scourge on our suburbs. They were designed to be around universities for international students, make accommodation a bit cheaper for them, and that's exactly where they should stay. State government needs to stop this and stop bringing it into our suburbs. And I'll say it again. I said 18 months ago, you think the community hates small lot housing, they're going to hate this room accommodation zoning that the state government have dropped on us.
Speaker 4, Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is not new. This has been around for a long, long time, decades. I told a couple of stories yesterday, but I won't share that here. I went on three websites to have a look about rentals, and they're everywhere. If you call it student accommodation, work accommodation, whatever it is, there's people sharing houses. And my understanding is if the owner of that property put all those people living there on this one lease, it's illegal. It just continues on as normal. So you're not going to change it. It is there, it has always been there, and will always be in the future. The one thing about having a rooming accommodation policy is that you'll be able to identify those properties that perhaps could offer better outcomes to the community, and things such as putting in more parking facilities on site, bathrooms, things like that. It is an improvement on what is currently there. It's not a case that you're going to be able to stop it. It's been there. I'd rather see things come before us and we try and get the best outcome in the designs and what they do, and at least we know that that's happening there and try and put some controls on it. But by just saying that, no, you're going to vote against this, the landlord just arrived at least to put them all on it. It'll still happen.
Yes, Madam Mayor, thank you. I'm going to seek a bit of guidance on this because I've got a number of points to raise, but I'd also like to make it very clear that as the elected representative of the community, this is not my personal views. I'm advocating for the residents. I do not support this application. I support the residents, and I'm choosing option 4, which is to refuse the application. I'm refusing this on the planning grounds of 1, the proposal is in conflict with the Urban Residential Zone Code because it's out of character in this location and will give rise to unacceptable amenity impacts. 2, the use is not anticipated by the current planning scheme and is in conflict with the overall outcomes of the Urban Residential Zone Code. I'd just like to comment, if I may, or continue on. Some of the comments raised about, well, it happens everywhere and there's rentals everywhere. Yes, there is rental properties everywhere, but there's a form of governance under it which basically the people renting the accommodation sign a lease, and that lease agreement is generally held by a real estate agent where a property manager has governance to inspect and there's liability back on the agent on behalf of the owner of the property. That's not happening in this case. The applicant, in my opinion, has used a loophole, which is called a retrospective application, to develop or improve this property. This property has been running now for about 3 years. There has been several complaints, if not dozens, and it really goes to the point in relation to this application. The application that's been put forward and the planning design that's been put forward is not basically what's on the ground. So understanding that this has been done retrospectively, it came about because of the numerous complaints and a show cause notice was provided to the owner by council. So this came about from a compliance issue. That's how this particular applicant was caught out. So for 3 years, this applicant has been sliding under the radar with individual leases in place, with tenants who have, there's no governance on it. We don't know how, and it's not council's business to find out how it's being paid for, but there's no governance on it. The plans do not reflect what's actually happening on the property, and I'll continue further here. Any statements in the report suggesting there are no social or amenity issues or problems that have impacted the community at large should be considered void due to the compliance action taken based on complaints made by residents living around the site for the last 3 years. The applicant, as a developer, had an opportunity to work with council and submit an application upon the initial intent of turning a residential home into what I believe to be a multiple dwelling. The applicant refused access to council's compliance team and engaged legal representation upon discovery of operating without approval. Council compliance officers have been vigorously refused access to the property, and this has been confirmed by council management. Council has not been afforded any evidence or of hard copy lease agreements, and so council has no way of assessing realistic arrangements before considering the planning aspects of this application. This is evidenced by the following from council compliance. Hi councillor, I am advised that we didn't view the leases, but communications with tenants and the property owner provided a very strong indication that separate leases were in place. Now just to reinforce what Councillor Gleeson said, no one's actually living on the premise and monitoring or governing the aspects of what takes place on that premise. It's purely been set up as an investment strategy and walked away from with individual leases in place. In 2016, Councillor Paul Gleeson diligently brought another case very similar to this matter at 4 Wardley Street, Capalabar, and I supported Councillor Gleeson's initial case to stop developers from turning residential dwellings into self-contained units without permit, calling them undefined rooming accommodation, something that is being addressed in the new planning scheme. This retrospective application presented today, lodged 3 years after the fact, in my view, has consequences for both the residents who live within proximity of the site and for the people who have leases to reside in the individual living accommodation. Council has given no approval for this property, and one of the key issues here is that under the Queensland Development Code, MP21, which is the Fire Safety and Budget Accommodation Buildings, that hasn't actually been provided for. So they've gone ahead, they've turned a residential dwelling into an undefined rooming accommodation. They haven't provided any of the relevant governing documents or addressed any of the legal issues, and they've been renting it out now for 3 years.
I think, Councillor, if you just... I think that's why they've got to show cause notice. I think we need
absolutely.
To actually... So they're now addressing that through the through that application.
Okay, so again, they're addressing it through what I believe to be a loophole, which is, in my opinion, is not conducive to someone who has taken a dwelling and turned it into a unit complex. It's more so, in my opinion, it would be, I've built a garden shed, I didn't realise I had to have an application, so therefore council has cut me some slack and allowed me to apply retrospectively. This is a much bigger issue as far as it goes through a retrospective application.
I'll get the officers. I mean, this happens across the board. If someone's caught out without a relevant approval, compliance officers go out there and they are then required to make an approval or they face the consequences of court. That is the process. That is the legal process.
Okay.
So conducive needs to be, it needs to be legal.
Yep,
not,
so
not
if
conducive.
I could just finish my final few points, that would be helpful. Yep, excellent. Thanks, Madam Mayor. So 63 residents put in a petition. They live within proximity of that site. There were also 8 submissions made to the planning department. One of those submissions came from one of the tenants who didn't want council to come in and actually have a look at what was going on in there or the design aspect. Okay, now what does that say? Okay, so when we talk about the parking aspects, Zig and Fuse Road, according to our traffic management department, accommodates for up to 10,000 traffic movements on that road. Yet in the report, it's been described as a normal urban residential street. It's actually not. It basically filters to 2 main arterial roads, And if you look at things like the trailer, for example, that's being parked there, it's still parked there now, and it's advertising Mookie's car servicing. So one of the tenants is actually operating a home business from this site under this lease as well.
And, to be a compliance issue.
Absolutely.
So I would assume that that's being also dealt with. You would have reported that. Or someone would
have
reported that.
Our compliance teams have been refused access. We actually can't get in there to see what's going on.
Well, if they're running home business, I think there would be action that we would be able to take. I'm just asking that question. I don't know, David, has that been reported? Do you know?
I'm not aware it's been reported, but certainly it could be.
Yeah, okay. So maybe we'll just take note of that. Thank you. Sorry, Councillor.
That's okay. So, look, I do not support this. I've got dozens of reasons here, especially for the amenity. It is next to two large schools. There is a backlog of traffic when the schools are operating, but that's not taking into account, I think it was 48% on the last traffic count of commercial vehicles being used along Zig and Fuse Road. The school buses have been moved on because they can't physically park outside Carmel College because there's not enough space. Yet we're expected to make allowances for anything up to 10 vehicles to park within a supposed residential dwelling because it looks like a house, and just accept that as the norm. Now, some of the vehicles that are parked there, I doubt whether they run. They are beat up old Commodores sitting in the front yard. And again, it's a compliance issue, but we're trying to say that this meets the normal urban dwelling, you know, it's residential, it's good, it's the vibe, whatever. The fact is that for 3 years we've had complaints about that, and now this guy's been caught and he's used a loophole to put a retrospective application in, and the actual design...
We've had a point of order called. Your point of order, Councillor?
The word retrospective and the other word,
loophole,
are totally inappropriate. It's not a loophole, not at all. They've been asked to put, there are non-complying things happening. They've been allowed to, that's not retrospective or loophole.
Okay, so, Councillor, I'll ask you to refrain from using those words, and maybe you're about to sum up, I believe, anyway.
Yes, Madam Mayor. So just look very quickly, even the design. Now, I understand this had to be assessed as a planning matter, and that's why I've sought consultation from the planning department to raise the planning points. The actual design that's here that was presented under the retrospective application is not conducive.
It's actually not a retrospective application. It's an application for them to actually comply with. So it's not retrospective. Those conditions...
Well, the advice I received was a retrospective application.
Sorry?
That's the advice I received.
They've applied because there's been a compliance action,
yep.
But the application that they've provided will be the conditions that they have to abide for into the future. Am I correct, officers? So it's not technically correct.
Just finishing. I agree with everything the residents have presented today and over the last 3 years. This came to my attention back in 2016, so we've been working on this for quite a long time. The plans that have been drawn up and presented are not reflective of what's actually happening on ground. Okay, so I just want everyone to take note of that. That for 3 years, this has gone on.
Another point of order, Councillor. Sorry, your point of order.
The Councillor's suggesting that, but is that true?
What's that? Sorry.
How does he have proof if nobody's entered the premises? He's making an allegation there that's unsubstantiated.
I'll use a simple example. So, for example, in the plans, they've presented a five-bay parking area. There is no five-bay parking area. They've presented in the plans that says there's parking stops.
Their application doesn't reflect the present. It needs to reflect the future. So what they put in the application is what they will have to provide. So the application you see... for various reasons and good reasons, to protect the amenity and to get cars off the road, will require them, if they want to operate under that particular use, they will have to provide those five car spaces. So that's what I mean. Although I know the words retrospective have been used, it's a compliance-driven an application. The application then needs to address how they're going to address the concerns of the residents and the legalities of the scheme. So just to be clear.
Well, just summing up, Madam Mayor, very quickly, I don't agree with where it's at. I don't agree how it's come about. I have the same concerns that there's the perception that the state government is going to put former prisoners into those areas now that the other facility has been closed down. And so I'd like to support my residents, and I move for option four under the as with the to support option four with the subsequent planning aspects that I've already listed.
We have a live motion at the moment, so we'll have to test that motion before we have another alternative put forward. Speaker four. Now, Councillor Boglari, you had your hand up. Speaker four. Councillor Bishop.
Madam Mayor, this and councillors, this issue is one of those vexing challenges, which is the result of people seeking diverse accommodation options within our city. That's a matter that I have asked for us to consider. These sorts of things are going to happen in between the cracks unless we have identified places that people can go, a sustainable accommodation strategy that allows people to look at the breadth of options that are available. And the reason I'm speaking for this is that it allows officers to commence the establishment of some parameters that allow us in future to have greater clarity about what we do with this challenging issue. It's not challenging because people want to create challenges. It's challenging because this is a response to the cost of living pressures that are in this city. People want to live here, and they don't currently have options under the available affordable housing parameters. To start a house with a mortgage of $350,000 is really all that we provide for through legislation. We are going to need to get creative to understand the needs in our city, and we need to, by getting greater clarity, support our residents in future. We will need to support them with things like the amenity of parking. So the officers in this instance have applied for compliance, well, they've provided for five car parkings to be designated to give some certainty, to look at how those movements will be managed on site and as they enter from the road and exit onto the road. Unless we get greater clarity, unless we really robustly as councillors demand our officers and work with our officers to address these needs in the city and get greater clarity, these are going to continue to take us by surprise. They will impact our community. So I am speaking in favour of this with the hope that we can continue to bring that clarity to our community with a review of affordable housing, but sustainable accommodation options, and that we can get more certainty for our residents in future. Who is going to go into that house? Any house will be up to the owner, to any property manager, and it will be up to the residents. That's about establishing a culture. If we can't create a culture that actually gives more clarity about the different options that are being provided, people will find themselves either couch surfing or in situations that we can't control. This gives us some more certainty. So, aware of the challenge, this is going to continue. It does require us to do something that is not being easily managed anywhere, but we're going to have to get greater clarity. I appreciate we're moving forward with greater clarity thanks to work that the officers are doing. It will have challenges ahead, and I do appreciate that community will keep us apprised of things. If there is ever a situation that arises, please contact the police immediately. All of those sorts of things still exist, but we are living and having to make a decision within broad parameters at the moment. So please let's get some more strategy in relation to what our future accommodations options are for people in the city. So reluctantly supporting this particular application.
I think Councillor Boglari was first.
Oh, thank you. I was just wanting to seek some clarity as well on a point, if an officer can answer for me, because I agree that every city needs affordable housing for many, many groups in our area. Thank you, David. Bainbridge Street, Ormiston, highlighted a lot of facts to me ages ago, But since then, because the state government way back in 2013 changed allowing the homes that the residents are nervous about, you know, could come there. And since then, Redden City Council, we have been lobbying and working with the state government to bring about changes. In our planning scheme, it's going to be going forward that they can only be located in commercial areas, major centres and, where there's transport for them and various services. So I just wanted to maybe alleviate that concern of the residents at this stage as well. David, if you could say how that those resident definition was actually being changed, just going forward so that that... Well, the lady who spoke this morning was mentioning that she was nervous that a transitional housing thing could come into this. But I just wanted to alleviate their fear because going forward, under our planning scheme, I'm on the belief that it couldn't be set up there because we're saying they have to be in major centres with transport and everything.
No. That's two separate. Rooming accommodation was not defined under our scheme, and under the new reviewed city plan, it will be defined and it will be, allocated to areas which have major centres or centres.
Yep.
Now, as far as community housing goes, which is a state government definition that doesn't require an application, that won't be, our scheme can't deal with that because it's overridden by state.
But the state has made various changes to theirs, I understood in our last letter from the Deputy Premier 6 months or so ago. I thought they were working on that.
Sorry, David, I don't know.
So going forward, I thought it was going to be more stringent about where they could be located. Maybe I'm not going to alleviate the fears of the residents. We've been working on it for 4 years.
Just to be clear, community housing is a slightly different definition. It's a definition under a different piece of legislation other than the planning scheme. So rooming accommodation is certainly about the layout.
We've sold that in our planning community scheme. I also thought the state in that last letter we got from...
So there are two definitions here that we're discussing. One is community residence. So community residence, back in around 2013, the state made a use under the Queensland planning provisions. And that's now carried over into the planning regulation, which came into effect last year. And that makes those uses self-assessable. So it takes it out of council's hands. They're self-assessable if they meet certain criteria in terms of number of residents and the like. They can occur anywhere in the city, and council can't regulate those because it's already regulated by state government. The previous uses that we've seen, the so-called transitional housing, fell into that community residence definition. That's a separate definition to rooming accommodation.
On that point, though, didn't we receive a letter last year from the state government saying that they were looking at our recommendations of only allowing them to be in major areas?
So council has been fairly firm on this for a number of years, including taking motions through the LGAQ, seeking... Not to necessarily prevent community residences, but to tighten up some of the criteria.
Get the locations right.
We did have previous correspondence from the state to say they would consider council's representations, but to date those representations
haven't
been reflected in the regulations.
They haven't made the changes. Okay, I thought it had gone further than that.
No, I thought
it had progressed further.
In fact, the regulation actually increased the locations where they could occur most recently. Actually, the opposite to what council is.
Oh, I hadn't seen that come through. Okay, well,
so that's community residence. Rooming accommodation is again defined by a state government under the planning regulation, and that is a completely different use to community residence. And community residence requires some form of care or supervision. Community residence really is a tenancy type agreement.
Because the Bainbridge Street one was just so highlighted to everybody.
I think it's really important.
The impacts on... No, I'm just saying...
Well, I think we're actually complicating the two quite a bit now.
But
so
it is a fear for residents when a house
I appreciate
is
that,
constructed
but we're not
in
assessing,
such a way.
Today we're not assessing a community residence. No. We are assessing a rooming accommodation, which is actually to put in place some conditions around something that's already been happening. So if we can just focus on that, that would be great.
Yep. Same thing, though. It's about location and having the right dwelling in the right location. I wanted to ask while the officers are here, if this motion was to go down and we were actually to put up option three to have additional requirements, because the local councillors' concerns are about non-compliant issues internally. Is there, because when I read the compliance assessment, it's got access and parking plans and road work, but it doesn't actually have the structure and what's inside. Can we add more compliance, if this is agreeing with the planning scheme as it is now, but can we add more compliance assessment in there to make sure it does tick and flick all the safety standards and the fire standards and everything else? Can we add that in there to give some reassurance?
I think it's a given, but I'll
get you. Council's role is to assess the planning aspects of this development, not the building aspects. And if council approves this development, the planning approval, they will still be subject to the building regulation and have to comply with the Queensland Development Code and the building regulation. That's not something council can enforce. So that's a matter that they have to comply with before they commence lawfully. If they're not compliant, then council does have compliance powers.
And who ensures that compliance?
Council does.
We pick up pieces.
Yep.
But up to date, we haven't been able to get into the house. By the sounds of it, we haven't been able to.
No, you asked if that's actually the case. Maybe if we did define the powers of the compliance officer, that would help.
Well, council officers do have powers of entry under the Local Government Act, and if they're prevented from exercising those, they do have means to go further to seek warrants to enter premises. Now, I don't know that we've reached that point, but I think that the key thing to bear in mind is that if council approves this development, the applicant will be required to comply with the plans that have been submitted, not what's on the ground at the moment. They'll be required to comply with what has been submitted and, so should council approve it. If they're not complying, then we do have powers to enter the premises to ensure compliance and to seek rectification of anything that's not compliant.
Okay, so there's no more additional requirements needed to be put in there. That will definitely all occur, because that seems to be the concerns of the residents at the moment as well.
No, they'll be subject to compliance.
Mm-hmm. I have a question and I have probably some comments. Thank you, Madam Chair. Look, I'm really torn on this. I do, as a parent of 20-something-year-olds, I do reject the automatic assumption that people who need to live in accommodation like this are going to be of some poor character or poor behaviour. And I do support what Councillor Bishop has said about the need for us to provide different types of housing choice and provide for different people of different levels of income, particularly young people, to be able to live in our city. So I do, generally think that we need to be looking at and providing different housing choices. When I look at this development, I see a block of units, and so the planning aspects of it trouble me, because I don't see that this is a block of land that is zoned for units, but to all intents and purposes, the difference between the flats and the units is really limited, except that there would probably be, and that's my question to officers, if this were a unit development, would there be a greater stringent conditions on them to provide things like sound barriers, a different waste collection system? What would be the essential differences between a unit block and this as it presents as a block of flats, essentially, please?
Um, Sorry.
Externally, I'm not talking about the bathrooms and the kitchens. That's fairly obvious. Fire petitions for a start, but that's building regulations. But I'm talking about from the perspective of the amenity of the residents who live around it. I'm assuming that were this units rather than rooming accommodation, that there would be on-site garbage pickup, possibly rather than, you know, or multiple bins, I don't know, and sound, more sound attenuation.
Not typically. I mean, we assess developments really on the merits and the scale of the proposal. And I mean, the first thing to say is I think it's clear that this is not a unit development. It doesn't meet the definition of a unit development. As the report points out, it really is more like a share house than a unit development. If there was a need for any acoustic barriers and the like, any measures to ensure amenity is not affected, that could be applied regardless of whether it's a unit development or rooming accommodation. If it's required to ensure the use is appropriate, it would be reasonable and relevant to apply it. But the report concludes that the scale of this use really is residential in nature, and it's unlikely that it would have any of those impacts where we will require acoustic fencing. Waste collection would be on street regardless of whether it was rooming accommodation or unit development, given, you know, the size of the lot, the scale of the proposal.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm quite torn with this, Madam Mayor, because I do think we need to provide this type of accommodation, and I can see the concerns of the residents and concerns of the local councillor. I would suggest if this motion put forward by Councillor Elliott doesn't get up, that we might need to have a small break in the meeting, if we can. Thank you.
Now, who was next for comments? Well, everyone who wants to speak is against right now, so I'll just take comments. Bearing in mind that we are trying to address this through our scheme review, so as I speak before, again, comment. Okay, I'll just go around the room. I'll start this way. Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Gollay.
Thanks, Mayor. I'll keep it fairly brief. We've already had a stab at it, but look. Essentially, we've got a big problem in the city with one bedroom. Yeah, it was against. Just a comment.
Well, I think I'm going to leave you then because you've had a comment. And
This has happened more than on one occasion where the council has had two or three stabs at comments.
Well, councillors, thank you. And you had a very good opportunity.
Is this a new rule for 2018, Mayor?
Councillor Gleeson, I'm trying to be fair, and you have had a chat. I'll come back to you if you can add something new. Thank you. Councillor Hughes. Have you got an issue with it?
We're going to maintain this all the
way
throughout the year.
If you're going to have an issue with the chair, you can actually move a motion.
Very rarely speak more than once, Mayor. Very, very rare.
That's great. And I'm going to give everyone who hasn't had a chance to speak, and I'll come back to you if you're going to add something new. That's only fair. And if you don't like it, you can move a motion of dissent in the chair. That's the standing orders. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Gleeson. Position. We talk about the castles, all of those sorts of things. This is a rabbit warren. This isn't anything that I can support at all. Undefined use, absolutely. We have no idea of what is in this use at all. Rooming accommodation is, when I talk about position, is not in Thornland. It's not in Bainbridge Street. It's not those.
Sorry, Councillor Hughes, I'm just going to make sure we're clear because what we have done is we've merged two different issues together.
Okay.
Bainbridge Street did not have to have a rooming accommodation approval.
I'll withdraw that. Zig and Fuse Road for rooming accommodation. When we talk about our city plan, we're talking about major hubs. Zig and Fuse Road is not an appropriate place for rooming accommodation. I understand that we not to be looking at what we're the parking that we're looking at when we see it on the street now as to what it can be, but for 3 years this home has been operating like that. It's totally inappropriate and I don't support it at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. In my opinion, this is totally inappropriate development in an urban residential area. Again, I draw your attention to the aesthetics of the street.
We're removing 800 millimetres of a garden out the front, and we're removing the side fence because we're worried about septet issues. I mean, that personally implies that the tenants are going to play up. I mean, for goodness sakes, you're turning it into a no-tell motel, in my opinion. I mean, this is just cheap accommodation. I don't think any parent in the city would want their child staying there if they've left school for cheaper accommodation. I grew up in Holland Park, and this kind of housing was at Woolloongabba and Spring Hill. And they're usually alcoholics and those sorts of people living in them.
Hey, Councillor. Thank you. Councillor, I'm going to ask each and every one of you to do your job and apply yourself to the application in front of you. We don't need emotive statements that have absolutely no basis. We have a job here to assess this against the legislation. The officers have provided you with a recommendation. If you don't like it, I respect that, but you need to actually have a legal reason that actually complies with the legislation to do so. So let's leave the emotive stuff for outside of the chambers and let's get back to the job that we're tasked to do. Thank you.
Okay, I'll draw the attention back to the street amenity. This isn't the amenity. The front of it's going to look like the front of a motel because you're putting five car parks on concrete platform straight at the front of the building. You're moving the side fence back to the building line so that the easement has surveillance, and you're allowing 800 millimetres of planting out the front. I mean, that's just terrible landscaping, and that's not indicative of what we want to see in an urban residential zone. Additionally, an urban residential zone, by definition, means a single house dwelling. This kind of stuff for a single family, this stuff should be in the MDR zone for assessment, not in a UR zone where typically it's single home, single family units. This is totally inappropriate.
I think that we just need some clarity on that because urban res actually under the scheme can allow for other uses other than just urban residential. So I just get the officer to clarify that. This is the complexity of the job that we have as councillors, abiding by state legislation and state definitions, but urban res doesn't always mean urban res. And we've all experienced that here in this room. And I'll just get the officer just to confirm that. And it's one of those unfortunate situations that we're faced with in making decisions.
It is correct that the current urban residential zone can have uses other than dwelling houses. And I think the key point is in the report, it really draws the line between a dwelling house type use and what can occur with that in terms of there's no regulation of landscaping or vegetation. There's no regulation over the amount of concrete or hard standing that can occur in a property. Council just cannot regulate those matters. And the report draws that comparison between what can happen for a typical residential house and what's being proposed for this development.
Thanks. I'll end up voting for this, but by a hair's breadth. A few minutes ago I wasn't, and it's just the reassurance that looking forward, by bringing this property, which I'm not at all impressed with this property's history, by the way, so to the residents and to the local councillor, not at all impressed with what I've heard. Looking backwards, but looking forward, by bringing this inside the tent, building the building certification and compliance issues, I think at least we can start to improve the situation. So the past can't be changed, but we can change the future. What I'm quite concerned with, and I think our community is better than this, and I think as a council we should be better than this, linking people's character to their choice of property, to their postcode, to their address, I think is I think it's beneath us. And
someone's called a point of order. What is your point of order, understanding?
Well, casting aspersions as to how councillors conduct themselves, is that related to the point of the actual debate on the issue?
What point of the standing orders are you referring to, councillor?
Oh, I'm just calling that into question.
It's not a point of order, I'm afraid. But the councillor...
I'll withdraw my...
Yeah, it's not point a point of order. Thank you.
Thank you.
And it's supporting your own aspirations for our community too, councillor.
I'm not sure that your microphone is on, councillor.
Yep, it's not close enough. But anyway, yeah, I think we just need to be very cautious of linking people's character to where they may choose to live, whether it's in this room or our community. So yes, So while I'm not at all impressed with the history of this property, and I think we have a challenging zoning and compliance issue ahead of us with this sort of accommodation, but I'm not speaking against this sort of accommodation. As I said, the history of this particular property I'm not happy with, but on the very smallest of margins, I will be voting for it so that we get some improvement into the future.
Okay, everyone's had a go at it. Councillor Gleeson, if you have any new information to add, and then Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Mayor. I'll get through those fairly quickly. Look, we do have a very real problem in the Redlands with single bedroom accommodations for whether it be for our younger people or our older people. And I'd really like to see a big discussion had on that to encourage some developers to create some smaller accommodation style which would be more affordable for all age brackets. Look, for all intents and purposes, this house is going to be used for a unit block, separate tenancies on the inside. What's the point of us doing a planning scheme? We determine, council determines where we want our units, where we want our high rises, and where we want our houses.
And we do that through the planning scheme, which we have tried to address this issue.
Well, in this case, the state government has trumped us, and they've said, no, we're going to let individuals put units in housing areas. Now, if this, as I think Councillor...
Point of order,
Councillor.
Yeah, it's not true. It's our planning scheme. We have lacked in not having a rooming accommodation.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe and which we didn't want it.
Which is why we're addressing it through the draft review of the scheme. Thank you.
We never allocated that area in the planning scheme review for units.
No, that's right. And had we had a defined rooming accommodation...
We shouldn't be accepting it, and we should be sending a strong message to the state.
Well, we can do that, but it will end up in court, and we'll end up having it without the conditions. Thank you. All right. Councillor Golay?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Once again, I would like to reinforce that I'm supporting my community and the residents, and I'm referring to the refusal under option 4 on the planning grounds listed, which is the proposal is in conflict with the urban residential zone code because it's out of character in this location and would give rise to unacceptable amenity impacts, and 2, the use is not anticipated by the current planning scheme and is in conflict with the overall outcomes of the urban residential zone code. Thank you.
Okay, I'll just have my 2 minutes worth, if that's okay, councillors, because I think, you know, we've heard discussions across today's agenda in regards to, you know, splitting of blocks and providing affordable housing, and you can see that some of those things don't always line up in different parts of the debate in our agenda. So that's one point. The other point I'd like to make is that this is a gap that we have identified, and this council has put forward to the state the use of a rooming accommodation and tried to locate it in more appropriate places. It's also really important to note that this house could have 10 people living in it as a family, 10 teenagers with 10 cars with 10 behavioural problems, if you want to put it that way. It could have all those things happening. In fact, these conditions give us more power as a council to protect the amenity of the residents. Now, agree with everything said. We have a lot of people in this city that will be doing exactly this. These people have got caught out, just as Wardley Street got caught out. And the fact is that they would argue they're the unlucky ones. Obviously, the residents might think differently about that, and I appreciate that and respect that. So, you know, the landscaping, for example, I can remember as my time as a councillor the number of complaints I had about neighbours who had bomb cars or long grass. These things are not unique to this particular use, is what I'm trying to say. The difference is here we are trying to put some framework and, I guess, expectations not only on the owner but for the community, and we have more power, in fact. Obviously, we will wait for the sign-off of our scheme, of the city plan, to be able to address this more effectively and perhaps have less discussion around this table about it, because it is a gap that we've identified, and that's because of the pressures that we've spoken about, young people looking for accommodation in the city, older people, single people, pensioners who need affordable housing to stay close to their family. So it's going to be a challenge for us across the board. We've made statements today that we don't want, you know, 350 square metre lots. That is a housing choice. That's about diversity. On the same hand, we've got, you know, people saying that we need that diversity, we need another choice of housing. So, you know, we're always in between a rock and a hard place here. The officers have made their recommendations to try and improve on the amenity of this block.
It's not ideal for any of us, and I know some of you will vote against it, and it's your right to do so, but as occurred with Wardley Street, we, at the end of the day, don't have the final say, and we can try and manage it better for our residents here in this chambers than allowing some distant judge to make that determination on our behalf. So we see this often in here, and I would rather have control over the outcomes for the residents, better control than currently applies, better control than someone that doesn't know the city who might make this judgment applies to it. And it's a tough decision, and sometimes we just have to make those decisions here in chambers whether we like it or not. So I will be supporting the officer's recommendation and making sure that the compliance issues that have been raised around the room, also by people in the gallery who spoke this evening, are addressed forthwith, and make sure that if there are any outstanding compliance issues, that it's dealt with as soon as possible and within the constraints of legislation that we work with. So with that, I'm going to hand back to Councillor Elliott to sum up, and we'll take it from there. Thank you.
Sorry, just a short one. Yeah, look, inflammatory language is not going to help these situations. And all you're going to do is drive these sort of things underground. Why would you bother? If you sat in the audience and think, I'm doing this, whoa, these people are all over like a cheap shirt. But and the reality is a Wardley, and this is what, number two, it'll get approved. But we've taken steps in our future planning scheme, and hopefully we won't have to go through this government to get it back, because I think we're on the fourth one. This is it. This is a simple thing. It is a house at the end of the day. We've had statements. It's a unit. We were told yesterday units have to have, you know, bathroom, kitchen, and all separate. You know, like it's a five-bedroom house. Some of the councils in this room would have houses bigger. And if this was a block of land and had a seven-bedroom house put on it, and all the kids park in the street, there's nothing we can do. At least we can regulate this one. Thank you.
I appreciate you've summed up. I was going to ask one question, if I could, of the officers, and on notice, is that obviously there are leases in place currently. I understand as of the application, the recommendation states. I'm just wondering if there's some advocacy we can do to make sure that when the leases, which go through the Residential Tenancies Act, I believe, and through that department, that they can actually check that the uses that are being leased out are actually approved by council, because clearly that's not happening. So I guess one extra step outside of this, and I'm happy for it to be taken on notice, but the way I read this is that anyone can put a lease on anything and don't check the use that council has actually approved. It's a small step. It's an online check. Be something that I think we should pursue in the interim, particularly while, you know, this might be an issue that raises its head, before we have our scheme in place or our city plan. I think that's just a governance issue. If they shouldn't be giving leases or approving leases or signing off on leases that don't have the use in place. Oh, okay. I've asked the officer to take on notice, but I'm happy for your view. I'm sorry I did that. It's okay.
Very quickly, and this is more of a question to officers. If this is approved, and based on its past history where, and I'm stating fact here from our own compliance department has said they were refused access to date, how do we then enact compliance if the owner turns around and says, yep, I've met all the recommendations you said, council, and no, you're still not getting access? Yesterday it was suggested about a warrant. Well, those steps weren't taken at all, and now we've got an MCU. So when are we going to get that strength to actually get access to see what's going on? Because as I stated yesterday, I saw kitchenettes and whatnot in there. So it's not.
So once you have these conditions, you have compliance that you can seek as well. So the officers do have the power. That was answered earlier. And I'm sure that you'll all be watching it, and the residents will definitely be watching it very carefully, and they have that process at their behest. So, well, no, because they have to actually meet the requirements of the approval. We actually have something we can actually put in front of them and say, you haven't met this requirement. At the moment, because the law allows them to make what you've called a retrospective, what officers call a retrospective application, that gives them the time to do that. That's what the process is. Okay, so what I might do is I might ask the officers just to take that offline and make sure that you're all very clear on that process, if I could, because I have actually kind of gone around the standing orders by asking that question.
To be able to just ask again then,
with option three, which is what I was asking before, if we only issue a preliminary approval and make sure that any additional requirements that are needed to give the local councillor that certainty he needs and what's in here, is that a more option that would...
Because we have to be able to enforce those things. So I was... No, it will be defined when you
but
have an when you have an approval. It will be.
Will they get
it will
the
be
full
defined
approval when council has ticked off?
Correct.
Actually, on all those things.
Conditions.
Would only issuing a preliminary approval give more certainty to everybody? No.
Okay. Lots of chatter. Would you like to? I'm going to put the motion. No, I'm going to put the motion, councillors. You've all had a very good opportunity to put forward your feelings and your thoughts. Those in favour. Those against? Motion is lost. So you need to...
I'd like to move that we have an adjournment, please, Madam Mayor.
I need to call the division first, thanks, councillors. So councillors, those in favour? Councillor Elliott, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams, those against? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson. I'm not quite sure about the alternative motion now. So you'll need to have reasons why you refuse the officer's recommendation, as well as your motion.
I'll move for a short adjournment, please, Madam Mayor.
Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Gleeson and Councillor Bishop were absent for that vote. Okay, councillors, over to you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the alternative motion that's up on the board, which is that council resolves to adopt option four in the report and refuse the application based on the reasons listed below. Which is one, the proposal is in conflict with the Urban Residential Zone Code because it is out of character in this location and will give rise to unacceptable amenity impacts, and two, that the use is not anticipated by the current planning scheme and is in conflict with the overall outcomes of the Urban Residential Zone Code. Thank you.
Move, Councillor Golay, seconded Councillor Boglari. Councillor Golay, if you're happy with this, I'll just go straight to the vote because everyone's articulated their concerns and we can get on with the meeting. You're happy with that?
Yes.
Everyone else happy with that? I'll put the motion, councillors. Those in favour? Those against? Okay, so the motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson. Those against? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Thank you, councillors. Moving on to item 11.2.6. Councillor Hughes, you're moving that?
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move 11.2.6, which is the sale of 100 square metres of surplus land at 25 McMillan Road, Alexandra Hills. Thank you.
Move, Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Elliott. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes. This is land owned by council with the Waste Operations Group, Water Group. They were the owners of the land, and the property is located on the northwest corner of this 27 to 31 McMillan Road, Alexandra Hills. It's been identified as surplus land, and the prospective new owner at 25 McMillan Road has approached council with a view of negotiating to purchase that. Thank you.
Any speakers against, councillors? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams. Those against, Councillor Gleeson. Item 11 point... Oh, sorry about it. Yep, on the mayoral minute. So, councillors, it was distributed to you as we spoke at the end of last year that the QCA had made recommendations in regards to our bulk water price path, and I said that we would bring this back this year so that we could put in a submission, which I believe closed at the end of this month. Is that correct,
correct, Deborah? So the motion is in front of you. I guess it's fair to say that we've had a long history here in Redland City, in Redland Shire, in regards to the takeover of our water and the cost impact that has meant to our community over that period, and that started a long time ago. And as anticipated, that debate still continues as the bulk water price ultimately in 2021 will hit about $3.06. That's the state government's revenue take, not ours. We take about 81% of the water consumption. State takes about 81% of the consumption charges, and council is highly and heavily regulated as to how what retail price they can put on that. So we have been given the option of two price pars. They both end up at $3.06. I'll argue the pain probably is neither here nor there for our residents, but Merrillmint is in front of you, and I'm opening it up for discussion. Thank you. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor. On the screen, there is Council's resolve. It's got 3 points. I've added point three, and I have distributed that, but your original mayoral minute that went out actually only had the 2 points. I just want to draw Councillor's attention to that point three.
Councillor Hughes has requested that I amend the mayoral minute to include item three, which I'm happy to do, which really basically allows us to deal with another issue that's become apparent in recent times in regards to residents who have concerns about not having a refund from the state on their component through a concealed leaks policy. That's probably in a nutshell. So just an opportunity with this in front of us to also write to SEQ Water and request them to, in fact, duplicate or complement our concealed leaks policy, which offers a refund to those who discover a leak on their own property, with certain criteria around it, of course. At the moment, SEQ Water offers no refund. Happy to open up discussion. If not, happy to put that mayoral minute to you. Councillor Boglari?
I think it's very much needed. I also just wanted to ask you, Mayor, there was a report given on water. And the pricing, is that available to the public at all? Because yes. I just think there's such confusion out there in the public about what is actually the state and what is the... I was thinking, this is great, we understand it, but the public probably don't understand the whole story. And if I think you were actually going to talk to that report at one stage.
I'll ask Deb to maybe
thank you.
Respond.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you as the Chair, thank you for the opportunity, Councillor. In November 2017, the QCA published a draft report for all stakeholders, to respond to. And it's regarding the price proposals, as I may talk to, from 2018 through to 2021. The financial services team here has read the report. As I may have pointed out, there are two options, two price paths, and one is smoothed a little less aggressively than the other. So price path one has an increase to Redlands, so just talking Redland City, not an overall common price path, of 8.2%, the proposed, for the move from 2017-18 to 2018-19, followed by a further 7.6% and then a further 2.5%. Price path two evens it a little bit more, moving year one 6.5%, year two 6.1%, and then year three 5.7%. So, as a finance manager, my recommendation would be price path two, but that document's in the public domain on the internet. It's not a document that's been specifically written for Redland City Council, but we are featured in the report as a distributor retailer of water.
I was just wondering if we could put that in water 101 terms. Perhaps and do a media release, because I've had so many phone calls after the last rates notice about water, or they blame rates, but when you break it down, it's actually water. And water is such a commodity that our young families are using, you know, quite a lot of. They just don't understand the cost these days. I think furthering on from this, we do need to do a bit of education, and with that we can probably get a bit more strength behind us to talk to the state.
I'm sure we have lots of graphs at our disposal that would show the breakdown of that, and maybe we can attach that to any media or to our website to educate or help educate the challenges. Sorry, Councillor.
Excuse me, Madam Deputy Mayor. We have a media release.
The draft, yes.
To supplement that. So I think we're very close, Deputy Mayor, to having that media release.
Well, we have to decide. We have to decide
on... Yeah, but we've got a draft that we're working on.
Yeah, so that's right. And we can also sorted. make sure that we provide some visuals through that, through our website, etc.
And excuse me, Mayor. Sorry, have you... Mayor. To our CFO, when you were saying QCA, just clarifying Queensland Competition Authority. So it's not the water, SEQ water. QCA that is setting this price.
They make a recommendation to the state. The state decides. So the QCA does actually oversee the price of water to varying degrees, both for councils and for the state. So they will make a recommendation. Ultimately, the state will make the decision. This is our opportunity on behalf of our residents, who I believe would expect us to continue to challenge over many years, as we have, the price of water to our residents. And so that's why we're bringing this here today, so that we can actually put that your request, obviously, to the state when they're making their decision. Are there any other comments, councillors? I think I just wanted to make it really clear that council has always been challenging, right from the word go, the takeover of water right through to the pricing of water. We've certainly been cognizant of the cost of living pressures on our community, and in fact to the point that over the last 3 years we've absorbed the cost of the state's decided bulk water price so that we can make it easier for our residents. We can't continue to do that forever. We'd like to recommend that the state use CPI as a portion of increase to their bulk waters into the future, and this doesn't actually provide at this point in time, but when you look at our overall expenditure in our budget each year, you'll see that about 12% now of our operational costs go straight to the state. So we raise 12% of our budget to go straight to the state for bulk water. That's a significant part of our budgeting process. And we are regulated to do that, and we don't really have a choice, but we do have an option right now to put forward to the state that we'll continue to challenge that. And I guess there could have been a worse outcome. At least it's probably a little bit better than the increases and the shocks that our citizens of Redlands have endured over the last almost 10 years, I suppose. It's about 10 years since this has been implemented. We've also done our best, as you know, to smooth those price increases previously as well. So this is our opportunity to, on behalf of our residents, to ask the state to really consider our position in addition to the QCA recommendations, and I guess be gentle with our public who actually paid for their water, in my view. I've got a very strong opinion of this many, many years ago, and we understand that SEQ needs to have a grid. I appreciate that, but we also believe that we had secured our water futures many, many years before this council and the councils that I've been involved with. So if there's no further discussion or questions, I'll put the motion, councillors, that it's as amended. Yes. Right, yeah. Yes. So we need to take the first four words out.
Correct.
So just to be clear on that particular component, that is just specifically, that point won't be directed at the Queensland Competition Authority, it will be directed to Southeast Queensland Water, who are yet to provide a concealed leak policy for the residents of Southeast Queensland. Councils across the region have varying concealed leak policies. They're not apples to apples, and we certainly have one that provides 100% remission to our pensioners and 80% based on some criteria, of course, if a leak is discovered. And council, if I recall correctly, was one of the first councils not only to, in regards to the leaks policy, to actually write to a resident who has extraordinary water usage over a period to alert them to the fact that it might be an issue on their property in regards to their pipes. So we've done that pretty much because we're very keen to conserve our water, once again, because our ratepayers paid dearly for a great pipeline to North Stradbroke Island and the Leslie Harrison Dam and treatment plants. So with that, if there's no further discussion, I'll put that mayoral minute. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors.
We have no notices of motion to repeal or amend resolutions, but we do have a notice of motion from Councillor Tolte. Would you like to move that motion, Councillor?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. It's a slightly amended motion to the one that's in the formal agenda. I'll be awaiting the information as requested, but it was formally dot point 2 and 3 before bringing back the motion to move to the infrastructure agreement. So I'd like to put to the councillors that they support the officers in doing this work as quickly as possible. It's an oversight that it hasn't been done previously. It's a long-running problem for the community. Or do I have to move it first, Madam Mayor, and get a seconder for you? Okay, well, I'll move that as it's up.
So moved, please. Seconded by Councillor Hughes. Over to you, Councillor Tolte.
We have a long-running problem in Mount Cotton around our community park, as has been the issue with so many of our community parks and infrastructure areas over past legacies. We have a park which essentially has been designated park because it was a flood zone. So that has made it problematic in developing it into the great community asset that it is. It is a great community asset. It's highly valued, not just by the people of Mount Cotton, but people come from all over Redland to use the park, particularly Redland Bay, Victoria Point, Alexandra Hills and Kapalabar. And we have a parking problem. We have constraints in the park because of the flooding and water bodies that are there. And we have a park which, in addition to the flooding and the water bodies, has very limited road access, almost none. We have an opportunity, while there is a development going on next door at the local shopping centre, to both save the community money in construction costs and to get an opportunity to gain further parking for the park and improved safe access from the main road. So we're trying very hard to work through a process where we can capitalise on that opportunity for the community and get a better outcome overall. And this is the first step in doing that.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. So we're just asking for a report to be brought back to Council in this instance, outlining those constraints and opportunities. Speaker against? Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Mayor. No, I can't support this because this is not how you do this. This is not trunk infrastructure. We sat here yesterday and two GMs confirmed this is not trunk infrastructure. This is a late addition. No comment was made when we spent $600,000 on a skate park that we suddenly need a car park. Now suddenly we need a car park. You know, I asked yesterday, is this going to be taken into account in the capital works program? I'm happy. I'm starting next time around. I've got a couple. I'll bring through notice and motion. I don't care if they fail or not. But if this is how we're going to run this council, and you for one have said, you know, capital works, we're trying to do this, good, so we don't have all these problems, and here we go. And we've got a schedule here to say when it's going to fit in. I'm sure the officers take a year to work through the capital program to say, where will this fit in? Well, It started last week. I've had things taken out over the years. I didn't even bother in that council. But, you know, this is totally inappropriate. It's not a trunk infrastructure thing. It's just jumping the queue. This is merely jumping the queue. That's all it is.
Well, we're not making a decision on it today, Councillor, asking for a report.
Well, you may as well line it up and it'll be a push as soon as it comes back, and officers now have to go away and spend time doing this. And what if it comes back at the 10-year capital works? You know, it's on the 10th year.
I'm pretty sure that most councillors here have asked for reports. So this is just for a report.
How you do business. You should not do business this way.
Mm. Well, yeah. There's been lots of requests from the floor over the period
here.
So for a report. No, I'm not running the show. This is going to be...
Absolutely.
Oh, Councillor...
This inappropriate type of way you do these things.
Councillor?
How come it...
Point of order, Madam Chair.
Point of order.
What has this got to do with the
motion? Councillor, we've had a point of order. Last on you. Any councillor... The point of order is that you're...
Relevance to the motion?
It's totally inappropriate.
At this time, this is...
Councillors each have a right to ask for a report, and councillors around the room will decide whether they support that or not. It's not about me voting for it. If there is an urgent opportunity that comes away, and many of you have done it, including you, Councillor Elliott, including you. So, councillors, we're asking for...
Yeah, well, shall we talk about the acquisition of a house for a park? Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Exactly. Thank you. All right, I'm not back to the topic. We are asking.
Point of order, Madam Mayor.
Point of order, Councillor Elliott.
Thank
you, both of you. You've had your opportunity. The point of order is you're not talking.
Point of order is that you can't make a reference to something completely irrelevant to make a point that is completely irrelevant. That's the point of order.
All right, moving on, councillors. So, councillors, we have a request for a report. Okay, so that's what we're talking about today. Speaker 4, Councillor Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think there's a bit of history with this particular park that this work probably has been overlooked. And I've personally got no problem in bringing back a report on any park. And I would assume there's probably other parks in other divisions too that would probably need to be referred to, and probably those we could look at offline to have some work done without coming to a general meeting. But this one, I do think there has been a number of issues over in the past that haven't been addressed. I've gone to the park. The access to the existing small car park is very dangerous. So I think there's a bit of a community need issue around there. Like all reports, there's no guarantee anything's going to get done. You know, it'll come back and it'll determine. We don't even know how many car parks are required for there. We might find it's far less than we think. I mean, but without the information, you can't make any decisions. And I do appreciate that there is a development ongoing and gives us opportunity if it fits with the parameters. And whether it gets done or not, it's up to us councillors. I mean, have the information. The officers told us yesterday that the timeframes are fine, if they can work with that, and I look forward to receiving that report or any other report that gives us better information on our parks around the city.
Thanks, Councillor Edwards. Speaker against? I'll have a speaker against first and I'll come to you. Speaker against?
Yes, Madam Mayor, as someone who does like to encourage us to have a strategic approach to events, I understand that Councillor Tolte has suggested these have been conversations that have gone on for some time and is looking to clarify that with agreement with officers. I think what we need to do is understand issues like this as part of if we're looking at car parking in a particular area, it does need to be applied to what I believe is being undertaken at the moment, which is a review of the open space strategy, which does look at things like parking in areas across the city. And I think that's an appropriate way to actually understand the needs as opposed to the individual perception of needs. It needs to be clarified across the whole organisation. And I'm in agreement with Councillor Elliott that this particular instance is very important for people across the city, but it's important to get it in order and understand that the whole city's got to line up a whole heap of ducks, and we don't want to just prioritise one area with the views on without it being actually strategically aligned. So I'm happy for us to have that brought to our attention, that across the city we need to look at issues like this. I just don't think that this is the right way to go about doing this.
I'll come back to that. Speaker 4, Councillor Mitchell.
Yes, I will be speaking for it, but because I also want the information, but it doesn't mean we'll necessarily queue jump, because there will be a budget ask, etc., into the future. I apologise to councillors. I did send an email yesterday to CEO and therefore to Pete Best around this matter. We were talking about the usage requirements around our parks and some of the perhaps legacy matters where there may indeed be a deficit in certain areas, and to see do we have an issue and what is the size and the scope of that issue. So I might ask through the chair to see if Peter Best would comment on what we can do in that place, please.
Madam Mayor, councillors, having received the request yesterday from Councillor Mitchell, Brad Salton will be taking over the Open Space Group on the 1st of February. One of his first tasks will be to do a gap analysis.
of the open space strategy versus what has in fact over the years been built, if I can put it that way, or made available to parks across the city, such that to take away what might be perceptions of not being parks not being serviced, to take away those perceptions and work from a known common baseline. I haven't got an idea of how long that will take, but I can assure you, having received the request yesterday, it's both supported by the CEO and I, and Brad has that task firsthand. Thank you.
On that point?
Mr. Best, I would assume that that analyst will come through, the result will be a forced ranking of priorities of parks throughout the city that would be done in a chronological order due to the needs.
So, and you're all well aware, I'm sure, parks are ranked themselves, T1, T2, whatever. Each of those parks has, within the open space strategy, identified attributes. What the analysis will do is to, as in the first instance, as to whether or not those attributes have been fulfilled or are to be fulfilled through the capital program, and that will give us an horizon. It's either been done, or it will be done, or may be done, or maybe not, an horizon when those activities will be closed out. That will result in a level of prioritisation.
Councillor Boglari, you have a question? Okay. Any other questions or comments? Councillor Hewlett, and then Councillor Gleeson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I was inclined to support when we discussed this yesterday, the motion, but I'm really concerned about that last sentence, including agreements that may be legally made with other parties for delivery of works. Mm-hmm. That's basically just saying queue jumping in brackets, because that it is. It's been funded out of infrastructure funding, which is not how we run CapEx.
Sorry, thank you, Council. I'll just get the CEO to clarify this.
Well, that's what it looks like.
No. Well, you have to read the first three words that the report includes. So that's just... It will just... Well, because you want to have all the information you possibly can before...
I know exactly how infrastructure funds work. I don't need to know.
Oh, OK. Well, if you think you know everything, then you don't need a report, but other people might want to report.
I'd like to report on the actual costing and the certificates.
Yeah, that's what it gives. It's actually giving you what you're asking for, Councillor.
No agreements that may legally fund. The only agreement would be that's going to come out of infrastructure funding, which just goes...
Well, no. Well, the officers are going to provide that information for you to make that decision. Well, I'll ask the CEO to comment. Okay, thank you. I'll get the CEO to comment because the CEO is agreeing with me and I just want to make sure I've articulated it clearly.
Well, I think what the report will do is run that to ground. This has been, I think, talked about for some years, and I think bringing a report to Council that puts it all in one spot, including funding mechanisms, which might be an infrastructure agreement, that's what I've asked officers to do, and that's what this motion would set in place.
Okay. So it's clear. Councillor Gleeson?
Thanks, Mayor. Absolutely support the report. Not a problem at all. Doesn't mean I'm going to support the outcome, the findings of it. It might come back that it's, you know, $4 million, and I couldn't support that in a, you know, throw that in unannounced. We have done that in the past. There's been, Council have had opportunities that we've taken, and we've had urgent items brought forward. The purchase of Willard Farm was one. This has happened many, many times before. We're not deciding today to commit $1 million or $500 or $2 million. We're committing to have a look to see whether there's an opportunity to tag in on the development that gives the ratepayers and the city a better opportunity. Mm-hmm. Now, it might be that this is a project the council could do in 5 years' time, and it might be a $1 million project. But what this report seeks to find out is, can it be done in conjunction with the development by the developer as a contract at a council for half the price? And we don't know. And this is what this report is seeking to find out. If it comes in and says the car park is $4 million, we've got to pay, no way I'm going to support it. But if the report comes back and says that the contractor can provide it to ratepayers for 50% of what it would cost council to provide it, hell yes, I'll support it. But we need to find that out, and that's the purpose of this report. By not supporting this report, shows a really closed mind thinking, we've got to support this, it's not costing anything. It may save us hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'll leave it at that. I'm going to support it.
Councillor Elliott? The officers would have to respond. Well, my understanding is that there was a pre-lodgement discussion. What my basic knowledge, there was a pre-lodgement discussion many years ago where this was raised as an opportunity, and it was officers were open to that idea. Okay, so I can't respond on behalf of the officers what they will do in respect to conversations with the shopping centres. But it has actually, if talking about raising expectations, this discussion occurred at the beginning of the process, as I understand it, from what officers have told me. Okay. Councillor Boglari?
I was just wanting to ask, would the report also cover, like it's got funding, I presume that also means budgetary implications, like a council, and also what effect it might have on CapEx, like what sort of priority is it actually going to get? Because I'm nervous with the date put in there. If the date wasn't put in there, because I know, but as soon as something's rushed back, you're then under pressure to approve it.
Cut through the CEO, is that a sufficient time for you to prepare a report? Peter?
Madam Mayor, councillors, the officers have indicated that they can meet that time frame. If we can't, we'll tell you early. If that's okay. So if we don't endeavour to hit the 21st of February, we will endeavour to hit the 21st of February, and work is afoot at the moment. We're not standing idle waiting for this to happen. If by circumstance we cannot make the meeting on the 21st, we'll tell you early and let you know, and the reasons why.
All right, councillors, any further discussion? Couple of points in response to some of the statements that have been made. When you write strategy, whether it's 4 years, 10 years, 20 years, 100 years, you can never identify every opportunity that might come your way. So that is why councillors are entitled in representing their community to bring forward an opportunity that may or may not meet the expectations of the broader community and their own division. And if I could just refer you to the CEO's opening statements when on outstanding reports, I'll just refer you to the fact there were three raised by councillors in this room to provide a report. One being, if I'm correct, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Councillor Bishop, I think you raised a request for a report on the area surrounding the Birkdale School of Arts. Councillor Elliott, I think you actually asked officers to prepare a report on Toondah Harbour. So, yeah, that's okay. Well, the officers, that's fine.
Write a reply on that?
That's fine. You can't, because you've had your say. I'm just saying that councillors have an opportunity. They are allowed under the legislation and the standing orders to request a report. In fact, that would be the best way to do it. I'm just trying to say, is comments were made that I'm making certain allowances. I'm not. The fact is I supported all of these reports that you all asked for, so that you have all the information so that you can make strong, supported decisions, and that's all we're asking for today. There's no commitment to budget, there's no commitment to capital plans, and I think that's a fair enough job, and each and every one of you want to represent your community to that level, and I can say that on each individual in this room. So that's all we're asking for. No, thank you. So, councillors, with that...
Can I have a right of reply on that?
Well, no, councillors, because it's here. We have reports. I'm not trying to identify... I'm not trying to identify the fact that you have asked for a report, the fact that it happens.
Yeah, I know. So I'd just like to establish that bringing something to mind that had not been brought to mind previously is different to work that is progressing that will actually give us the same outcome.
That's your opinion. But I'm just saying that whatever your views of how you bring a report, how someone else requests, it happens. You're entitled to do that. And that's you doing your job as councillors representing your division. That's all I'm saying. So, councillors, with that, you have the notice of motion in front of you. You've had the debate. We're asking for a report that will be brought back by the 21st of February, unless the officers request further time or have any issues, and they'll tell you why. It will have all the details you will need to make a decision at that point in time, and in representing the whole city and the needs of various parts of the city, the councillor has brought this forward. So, Councillor Tolte, if you want to sum up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, look, I urge councillors, please, to support this. This is not a new thing. This is not something that you have all just heard about recently. I have been updating you on this certainly all through last year, since the first application for the development for the extension of the shopping centre came through. I had my first meeting with regard to this with the developers, the officers and the various departments in June 2015. And I have been updating councillors all the way along. I have taken advice at every turn from the various departments as to what was required in order... First of all, that's not a point of order, councillor. And secondly, do you have any evidence to that fact? Okay, thank you. Councillor, the very last Mayor Councillor discussion...
There is no point of order. Thank you.
I'm not misleading anyone. I can tell you exactly when it was mentioned.
Councillor Elliott, Councillor Tolte, please stop. Standing orders mean that you don't speak over someone who has the floor. No, thank you. Councillor,
that's not a point of order, and I'm not misleading anyone.
Councillor?
You have.
No.
Twice you've been to talk about that. Once to mention it...
Thank you, Councillor. Thank you, Councillor. Thank you, Councillor.
Councillor, the fact you leave early in a lot of meetings probably contributes
all right,
to the fact that you didn't hear it.
Enough. Thank you. Councillor Elliott, please. Councillor Elliott, please. Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Councillor Elliott.
Don't imbue reasons why.
Councillor Elliott, councillors, I'm going to ask both of you. You have 3 seconds or you're both leaving the room. This chamber needs to be respectful of other people's position in the community and our standing orders. And frankly, neither of you right now have been living by the standing orders that you, as a council, we as a council, adopted. And if you can't generate respect in this chamber, then don't expect your community to do the same. So when I ask you as chair, in my role, to please stop speaking, please have the respect and courtesy to do that so we can manage a professional, mature debate. If you want to have that kind of tit for tat, go outside and do it. Understood? I don't like having to act like a school teacher or a mother. But frankly, there are times where I feel just that's the role that I've got to have in here. Finish summing up, please, Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I mentioned, I have been following this through since June 2015 with offices and departments, and I have taken advice at every turn as to when and how it needed to move forward. At this point, officers have said they need a motion of council, so there is a motion of council. I'm asking you please to support the report coming back.
Put the motion, councillors. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams, those against, Councillor Elliott. Thank you, councillors. That brings us to... we don't have any urgent business that I understand, but we do... Thank you. We have closed session, councillors. Are we required to go into closed session for discussion? Just double check with everyone. Just making sure. So I'm checking. Do you need to move into closed session? Anyone that needs to move into closed session, can you just indicate that you do? You don't? All right. So we have a. No? You're right, councillor. So we have 3 items, as I understand it. You're all good? Okay. So item 16.1.1, I move for that, thanks. Sale of the land for overdue rates and charges. Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop, those against, Councillor Hewlett. Item 16.2.1,
purchase of land for conservation purposes. Move for that. Move, Councillor Edwards. Seconded, Councillor Elliott. Or Councillor Elliott, with those in favour? Sorry. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 16.2.2. Item about the appeal. Move, Councillor Boglari. Seconded, Councillor Hughes. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Councillors, that ends all of our official business for today, and I close the meeting at 12:13. Thank you.